This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
The headline for the Russian Times today, Russia and the Arab League can reshape the world together with a new international institution. A new international institution to profoundly change the definition of the nations of the world. I welcome you to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's conversation with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms, and today you're going to have to follow very carefully because we're going to move very quickly, going all the way back to, what should we say, October of 2011. October 2011, the Los Angeles Times sounded a global alarm. Here's what they said. Watch out for Putin and Russia. Russia is entering rough waters, and the world will feel the turbulence. Well, the turbulence is being felt. It's being felt increasingly now. The troubling tale of increasing turbulence generated by Putin's Russia has been written on the trembling walls of history, I wrote, beginning with the turn of the third millennium. I wrote that in the book King of the Mountain. The Associated Press captured the drama in the headline, Russia sees U.S. bid to dominate the world, and Putin, the acting president, unveiled Russia's new national security doctrine, broadening the Kremlin's authority to use nuclear weapons and accusing the United States of trying to weaken Russia and become the world's dominant power, which, by the way, Vladimir Putin admitted had happened with regard to the matter of oil and gas, because he had commissioned a report internally in Russia that came to the conclusion that America had become the world's leading, ultimate leading force for the production of energy in the world, superseding the Arab nations, superseding Russia, Iran, and all of the Muslim nations. Well, as we say here on this program, Viewpoint always sets the course of destiny. And it's a fascinating aspect of human psychology, I think, that we often see our own nefarious ways and intentions born out in the lives of others. We tend to project our own undisclosed and undesirable thoughts and intentions onto others so as to justify otherwise seemingly unjustifiable reactions. And it was then of great interest when Russia's own paper called Pravda, meaning the truth, carried the headline just 8 years later, USA believes Russia threatens its interests all over the world. And of even greater interest was the bold lead-in to a troubling email message that author received from the UK earlier in 2008 bearing the words Russia's plans to invade and control the world. We're going to take a look at all of that here today. In Russia's true objectives in pursuit of the elusive prize of King of the Mountain. And in order to comprehend the bigger picture, the greater panoply of Putin's purposes, we have to rise above, which you always say, a two-dimensional into a multidimensional outlook, because the craftiness of political chicanery at nearly every juncture and on nearly every conceivable issue exceeds in spades. That's what might customarily meet the natural eye. So the battle lines on this front are decidedly drawn. Yes, indeed, it seems to be Russia versus the West, but even more so, it's Putin versus the Pope. Putin versus the Pope. So welcome to Viewpoint. Again, it's conversation with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And why would we say Putin versus the Pope? Has anything happened just in the last week or so that would help to reinforce that understanding? Indeed, there has been. Because Russia was asked to join with America and Ukraine, Zelensky. Putin was asked to join with Zelensky and Mr. Trump in the Vatican to discuss a peace between the countries, and Mr. Putin declined. The news media reported he just declined. He declined to meet at the Vatican. But the question is, why did he decline to meet at the Vatican? Is there anything that we can understand from Putin's viewpoint and Russian history that would help us to understand why Mr. Putin declined to meet at the Vatican for a peace conference to settle the issue between Ukraine? The answer is very simple. It's very simple. If you understand the dynamics, the integration between politics and the so-called Christian faith in Russia. You see, the Christian faith in Russia is dominated by what is known as the Russian Orthodox Church. Well, the Russian Orthodox Church is not a friend of grace, so to speak, with the Vatican and Roman Catholicism. In fact, the efforts have been made for over 1,000 years to reunite the Orthodox churches, including the Russian Orthodox Church, with papal authority in the Vatican. And that has been continuously resisted up till now for over 1,000 years. Why is that? If we were to go back in history, we would find, going back into about 1500, a prophecy was stated. Whether or not you believe it to be a true prophecy is not the issue, because there are those who do believe that, and viewpoint determines destiny. But how did this prophecy arise in the 1500s in Russia? Well, let's trace the significance of it. First of all, the Roman Catholic Church was really born somewhere around the 500, 450, 500 AD, not immediately after the resurrection of Jesus Christ. The real Roman Orthodox, or Roman Catholic Church, was actually born when the authority of the Roman emperor, who merged religious and civil authority in his title, Pontifex Maximus, was transferred to the Bishop of Rome. When that happened, the Roman Catholic Church was born as we understand it today. The Pope took on the title Pontifex Maximus. In other words, the maximum pontiff, merging all authority of both church and state. The problem is that after a number of centuries, the ruling of the so-called Roman Catholic Church under the bishops was seen to be increasingly corrupt. Not just civilly corrupt, but spiritually corrupt. And so a movement took place to transfer what they believed to be genuine spiritual authority to Constantinople, named after Constantine, the Byzantine Empire. For a number of years, decades, centuries, Constantinople became, what should we say, the heartthrob of what was believed to be true Orthodox Christianity that had been abandoned by the Roman Catholic Church. So how did we get this to Russia? Stay tuned, friends. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismire, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismire. Today we're taking a look at the bear and the pope, actually the realignment of nations, and we're going to see how the nations are realigning. And the question is, why are they realigning? Why are the nations realigning? Is there prophetic significance in the realignment of the nations? I believe there is. If we were to try to point with absolute pinpoint specificity, it might be hard for us to do that. But in order for the events of biblical prophecy to come forth and to their conclusion, there must be a realignment of the nations. It's already been taking place. We don't have time to go back and take a look at all the ways that the realignment of nations has been taking place just in the past 70 years, but it has. But today we're focusing specifically on the issue of Russia and its role in this realignment of nations. Whether you want to call it the bear versus the Pope or whatever you want to call it, all of these things merge together to help us to understand the greater panoply of prophetic purposes right now in our midst. So, we were in the Byzantine Empire, Constantinople. That is where Christian Orthodoxy found its resting place after the leaving of the Roman Catholic Church under the papacy because of the alleged infidelity to the scriptures and the corruption within. So it was reconstituted in Constantinople, called the Eastern Orthodox Church. Well, then came the Muslims. The hordes of Muslims came in and destroyed Constantinople. And the Christians of Constantinople, the alleged Orthodox Christians who had supposedly been preserving the faith once delivered to the saints, made their way to Moscow. May come as a surprise, but that's what they did. They made their way to Moscow. Well, around 1500 AD, there was a prophecy that came forth in Russia. A fellow by the name of Philofi, and he made this statement. He said that the Roman Catholic Rome, that Russia was the third Rome and there would never be another. The third Rome. That taint came on to haunt or hover over all of Russian history since then. Russia would be the third Rome, and there would never be another. So in other words, there was this Roman Catholic Church, and then that shifted over to Constantinople and the Orthodox Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church there, and then those folks shifted to Russia that became known as the Russian Orthodox Church. From the perspective of Russia then, and Vladimir Putin, the Russian Orthodox Church is the only true church. And what implications does that have for the future? It was the new Rome, the third Rome, and there would never be another. So third Rome thinking served to elevate Russia's conception of its place within the Orthodox Christian world. In fact, within the whole world. And so closely linked was Russia's identity of soul with the concept of Third Rome that in the 1510s, Joseph of Voldoc, while claiming that the Orthodox Tsar was in the power like unto God, asserting that any wavering from orthodoxy would lead to the fall of Russia. So, that means that the Third Rome has to assert its global rule against First Rome, which is under the papacy. Therefore, from Vladimir Putin's viewpoint and the Archbishop or Metropolitan, as they call him, of the Russian Orthodox Church, they cannot justify, and it would be a spiritual and political shame to allow Vladimir Putin and Russia to negotiate in the Vatican any kind of peace agreement. It would be like submitting once and for all to the authority of the papacy. Ain't going to happen. That's the reason why, and you'll never hear that discussed in the news. Maybe they don't know about it, or maybe they think it's too delicate to talk about, but we're talking about it right here so that we can understand why people do what they do or don't do what they don't do. So, we're looking at a situation now where Vladimir Putin, who has been reconstituted as the head of the of Russia now for, what is it, three or four terms now, intermediated by Medvedev, who substituted for a short period of time in the midst so he could so that Putin could continue on and contain and maintain control for a reason to lead Russia into its dominance in the world. That's what we're dealing with. And viewpoint determines destiny. It just does. Now, there are many other things that we could talk about in relationship to this bid to dominate the world, the rise of Russia. People thought that Russia was dead. But by the spring of 2005, Russia began a serious Middle East venture designed to reassert its influence, said the Jerusalem Post. Russia's ambitions were growing to a Soviet-sized era. It wanted to be involved in the international games that are now the recreation of the European Union and the United States. By renewing political and military relations with the countries the U.S. has blackballed, the downsized former superpower aimed to bring back the glory of its Soviet-era days when it played countries like chess pieces. So Russian resurgence seemed to catch many by surprise, but the obvious conclusion by anybody who was observing was that indeed the Russian bear was rising again. In fact, William Sapphire, you remember his name, back in the New York Times, called it Putin's creeping coup. Another called it emerging shadows of the hammer and sickle. Talking about the man who would be czar, Vladimir Putin. In fact, that is a very interesting title, and it was given, if you want to follow, in my book, King of the Mountain, you'll find that all of this is pinpointed right there in 2013. So what was written in this book in 2013 is happening right now. The man who would be czar. What the rise of Putin says about the Russian soul. He reveres the KGB, never resigned from the Communist Party, believes that snitches in the Soviet era were patriots, says a strong state is in Russia's genetic code. Vladimir Putin's rise to the brink of the Russian presidency has been so swift and so unexpected that Washington and the rest of the world were caught flat-footed. The Newsweek stated he strikes just the right chords of nationalism and speaks to Russian pride and backs up his words with action. Putin is the Russian everyman made good. He never ran for office, had never won a single vote. He's like a leader of a street gang on whom you can rely. He made clear that in his heart he's comfortable with the use of force. You have to hit first, he says, and hit so hard that your opponent will not get up. So where does that lead us? Where might Putin apply it in the future is what the world will soon find out. Now, before we go further into looking at what Russia has announced just in the last couple of days with regard to reshaping the world, I want to make available to you my book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic End Time Battle. If you do not have this book, it's going to be very hard for you to understand the greater picture or panoply of history and prophecy that are emerging so very, very rapidly in front of us. It's going to be so fascinating as you pick the book up and begin to read it. It's not full of opinion. It's full of absolute facts that are cited, hundreds of them, from all over the world. The end notes are voluminous, hundreds of them. Why? Because as a good trial lawyer, I don't want to present things that are my opinions. In fact, there are 443 endnotes detailing articles, books, materials, speeches from all over the world. It is a $20 book, yours for $15 on our website, saveus.org. King of the Mountain. King of the Mountain. Go to the website, saveus.org, get your copy, give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. By the way, those of you that want to immediately go to Amazon to try to get the book, it's not there. Not there anymore. It's only available on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. $15 will put the $20 book in your hands. I don't think you're going to want to miss it. I really don't. Okay, let us shift from what we have been talking about now, laying a foundation for where Vladimir Putin gets his vision, and let us move now to the latest article that helps us to understand how Mr. Putin is now seeking to reshape the entire world around his vision. And in order to understand that, we go to this quote. This is an amazing quote. It goes back about 15 years. In the words of Vladimir Putin, quote, "Russia is the most reliable partner of the Islamic world and the most defender of its interests. Russia has always been the most faithful, reliable, and consistent defender of the interests of the Islamic world. Russia is one of the main pillars of the Islamic world in the struggle for rights of Islamic states in the international arena." So, Mr. Putin declares Russia is the defender of the Islamic world. Now, with that in tow, we go into the latest iteration of Mr. Putin and what he's doing to reshape the world for ultimate dominion. Are you ready for this? Here's the headline from the Russian Times: Russia and the Arab League can reshape the world together. Well, what's the Arab League? It's the group of Muslims, 480 million out there, that are being embraced by Vladimir Putin for the purpose of increasing his dominion in the world. So here you have the Islamic world that contains, what, a third or more of all of the energy of the world, oil and gas, coupled with Russia, that until the United States took over, was the number one producer of oil and gas in the world. So now you have the countries, Russia and the Muslim world, basically encompassing, domineering, dominating over half of the energy of the world. And as it has been said, he who rules the energy rules the world. But it's also said he who rules the Temple Mount rules the world. So he who rules the energy rules the Temple Mount. That's the bigger vision. Please understand this. So you won't hear that in the news media about the Temple Mount and the goal, the greater goal to dominate the world. But that's the goal. And that's why I wrote the book, King of the Mountain, the eternal epic and end time battle, for it is said that he who rules the Temple Mount rules the world. So, here we go. It's time for the relationship between Moscow and the Middle Eastern partners to evolve into a new international institution. Notice the language, a new international institution. It's just another way of phrasing a new world order. A new world order governed or dominated by whom? By Russia. We'll be right back, friends. You're listening to Viewpoint.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries.
on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Perhaps only Pope John II saw what was coming, and he had a 25-year pontificate there. And you'll remember that Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, and they came together, together with the Pope John Paul II, to supposedly deliver the world from communism and from Russia. Well, Pope John Paul II had a view concerning Russia. And in order to understand this, you have to understand that Russia considered itself to be the third Rome, and there would never be another. So Russia was in absolute competition with the Roman Catholic Church and its papacy. So there are global religious implications for all of this. 1,500 years of Russia's political and religious history has to be understood in order to get the vast implications for that which is now is and will soon be confronting the peoples of this planet. So, it appears that this matter of the burden of Third Rome is revealed in a long tradition of Russian messianism, which was rejuvenated after cyclical decline of Russian political authority. So, because of that, modern all-Russian nationalism has become a new and dangerous chimera of economically and politically frustrated Russians. The preview of the book Russia's Rome, Imperial Visions, Messianic Dreams, says this: the myth of Russia or the Third Rome was resurrected to create a Rome-based discourse of Russian national identity that endured even as the empire of the Tsars, that is the Russian Caesars, declined and fell and a new state replaced it. In other words, it has persisted even through communism. So where does that put us? The late John Paul II made this case. He said, everything must change. That was the opening salvo of one of the most profound history-revealing books of our time, perhaps of all time, called The Keys of This Blood by Malachi Martin, a Vatican insider. He wrote this provocative book. It's about 750 pages. And here's what he said. Pope John Paul II versus Russia and the West for control of the New World Order. Oh, okay. So it's not just Russia that wants to be in control of the New World Order and the one global government. It's the papacy. We need to understand that. The Pope actually said so. So on October 14th, 1978, Malachi Martin, a new era, said a new era began for the Roman Catholic Church, that is Western Catholicism, and its nearly 1 billion adherents around the world. The curtains were raised on the first act of the global competition that would end in 1,000 years of history as completely as if a nuclear war had been fought. A drama that would leave no regions or nations or individuals as they had been before. On that momentous day, the cardinals of the Roman Catholic Church assembled in the Vatican from around the world and elected the 264th Pope of the Roman Catholic Church, Cardinal Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, Poland, who adopted the name John Paul II. John Paul II spoke on that day as to how he viewed human history. Here's what he said. The entire history of man is in fact persuaded by a tremendous struggle against the force of evil in the world. He announced that day his overarching new principle of religion for all Christians, yes, but for all mankind as well. He said this Pope commits himself to Mary. He commits the Roman Church to her as the token and principle of all churches in the world in their universal unity. No Pope had ever before spoken of such a universal unity of all churches, but where would it lead? In what broader geopolitical context was it to be understood? Well, in what was called the millennial end game. That's what Malachi Martin called it, the grand design of Pope John Paul II. He said, we're now standing in the face of the greatest historical confrontation humanity has gone through, a test of 2,000 years of culture and Christian civilization, but he chided his listeners, wide circles of American society and wide circles of the Christian community do not fully realize this. What was it that they didn't realize? From John Paul II's perspective, the real battle was with Russia and the Western nations. In other words, to put it as bluntly and as straightly so that we cannot miss it, Pope John Paul II believed that Russia's destiny was to try to save the world, to become the leader of the world, but also in competition was the papacy. And in competition with both of them was a secular group of nations, the Western world, the resurrected Roman Empire of Daniel's prophecy. Those were going to be the three great competitors. And we're seeing it playing out right now. Right now. And if we do not understand the greater picture here, you could ask the question, will the third Rome unite with the first Rome? Not likely. Not likely. That's why Vladimir Putin refused to join this week for a peace conference at the Vatican. We're not, in his mind, he and the metropolitan head of the Russian Orthodox Church, seeing itself as the final great engine of Christianity to save the world, we are not going to submit to the authority of the papacy. It's a battle royal. It's been in process for over 1,000 years. And it's going to be played out. And it's being played out right in front of us. And that's the reason why John Paul II dedicated Russia to Mary, in the hope that somehow he, through dedicating Russia to Mary, could overcome the third Rome status of Russia, their belief that they would become the savior of the world. Is this making any sense to you? So, we now move from there back to the article that came out from the Russian Times in the last day or two. The Russian and the Arab League can reshape the world together, evolving into a new international institution to rule the world. Russian President Vladimir Putin has sent an official telegram to the leaders of the member states of the Arab Leagues, extending a formal invitation to participate in the first Russian-Arab summit scheduled to take place on October 15th, 2025. About 5 months from now, 4 months from now. The message, the opening of the 34th Arab League summit, which is being held against the backdrop of a highly complex international situation, particularly given the escalating conflict in the Middle East. In his address, President Putin emphasized that Russia views the League as one of the most important regional organizations, one that plays a crucial role in maintaining peace, stability, and security, both within the Arab world and beyond. Expanding multilateral cooperation. That's language, by the way, that is designed, it's fighting language against the entire West. He understood that the intensifying violence threatens to further destabilize the region, exacerbating social, economic, and political challenges in neighboring countries and posing a serious risk to international security as a whole. So he said the Arab League is increasingly vital as a mechanism for coordinating the positions of Arab nations. Why? Well, they control, together with Russia, over 50% of the energy of the world. But he doesn't mention that in his address to them because that's a well-known truth. He promotes other things that sound sweet and nice. We're here to work together. We're here just to have a common respect and shared commitment for stability and prosperity, he said. The Arab world, represented by the Arab League, stands at the threshold of a profound redefinition of its role in global politics. A shifting world order. Remember at the beginning of the program, we talked about the realignment of nations? That's what's happening. And why would this be such a comforting thing and such a desirable thing for Vladimir Putin? Because he has to have a whole lot of other nations outside the Western one world order and outside the Vatican itself and the papacy in order to accomplish his goal. So there are two ways that that's being accomplished. Number one, it's already been in the process of being accomplished by the formation of the BRICS nations, B-R-I-C-S, where Vladimir Putin reached out to China. They had no love affair between them, but they needed each other. And so they realigned and called themselves great friends when they weren't friends at all. But the enemy of my enemy is my friend, you see. And so China and Russia become friends for other purposes. And then together with Brazil and a number of other nations, they formed the BRICS nations, India. And then out of that has come another 20-some nations that have been added to the BRICS nations, which, again, looks like a formation of a replication of the European Union. But it's not European now. It's all the nations that are outside Europe and outside the Western world, outside the ancient Roman Empire that Daniel talked about as the final world government. So that having been formed, and now bringing in the Arab nations as a group, is a coup beyond imagination. It's about power, perks, and position. It's about coordinating the nations, realigning the nations to set the stage. For what? What prophetic significance could this amount to? We'll be back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Holy Vladimir, pray for us. That was the shocking and seemingly incongruous headline from the online version of the German Der Spiegel magazine, one of Europe's most respected news magazines. Holy Vladimir, pray for us? Why would a rising trend in Russia lead people to pray to Vladimir Putin, honoring the ex-KGB once and future president as the reincarnation of St. Paul? Yet that's exactly what it said. And it reflects a moral, spiritual, social, and nationalist yearning in Russia to regain global glory regardless of the cost. Let's put this in another term before we get back to the realigning of the nations. Members of the Russian Orthodox Church sect hiked up a hill near the Volga to what is called the Chapel of Russia's Resurrection, where they spread out prayer rugs in prayer to the patron saint, Vladimir Putin, whom they believe is a reincarnation of St. Paul. Their leader says, "She proclaims what God has revealed to me. Just as Saul persecuted Christians before his conversion to St. Paul, she believes Putin once persecuted the faithful as a Soviet KGB officer." She said the Soviets blew up churches or replaced them with swimming pools, but when Putin became president, the Holy Spirit came to him. Then, she says, Putin leads his flock wisely, just like the Apostle Paul did. So try to get inside for a moment. Try to get inside the Russian bosom, shall we say, brokenhearted, laden with despair since the Bolshevik Revolution a century ago. Their hopes were crushed. Their faith was dismembered. There was a moral vacuum. Everything looked lost. It was black. It was dark. Then along comes a seeming champion in whom there's a void of direction, can suddenly and vicariously live out their hopes and dreams for a resurrection of Russian glory, and that's Vladimir Putin, my friends. Across Russia, popular affection for Putin started turning to religious worship. Indeed, the country's top religious rabbi, Beryl Lazar, swooned that Russians had every reason to ask God to bless you. "You save hundreds and thousands of worlds," he said, of Putin. The influential deputy chief of the Kremlin administration saw Putin as a man whom fate and the Lord sent to Russia. So how broadly are these or similar sentiments weighing in the minds and hearts of long downtrodden people that are aspiring to return to national glory on the world stage? Well, the polls have consistently shown that Vladimir Putin, it's like the Putin cult. His popularity exceeds all the presidents of the United States. But just how deeply do these dramatically shifted sentiments reside in Putin present in the popular and government imagination? Well, crowning the city's St. Petersburg, the city's Peter and Paul Cathedral, Putin's face was mounted on a photo of cherubim. "He had the spirit of a czar in him," said Mother Fatina. "Every day we prayed for him to return to the Kremlin." Prayerful pleas did not go unheard. At least the 11,000 delegates and party members of the United Russia at a party congress to usher Putin as president, they cheered like true believers in Moscow's Ice Palace at what amounted to a coronation mass. Regardless of the glowing and growing public worship, Mother Fatina believes the people have no real choice. Why? Because, she said, God has appointed Putin to Russia, listen to this, to prepare for the coming of Jesus Christ. Now, I'm not saying that's what Putin has been inaugurated to do. I'm saying that's what they believe he's inaugurated to do, and viewpoint determines destiny. So it determines the thrust. This is the reason, friends, why in the West we cannot understand what's going on in Russia and with Vladimir Putin. Can't understand it because it's so contrary to everything we think we believe or do believe. Yet the West has decided nothing has changed. It's just like everybody else. Putin's just like everybody else. Russia's just like everybody else. No, it's not true. It's just not true. Whether you believe God has appointed Vladimir Putin to Russia to prepare for the coming of Jesus Christ is not the issue. It's what they believe. It's what a large number of people believe, because they believe that Russia is the third Rome, the final residency of the true Orthodox Church of Jesus Christ, and therefore will be the one to prepare. And Putin says he's the guardian of that and has linked arms with the Russian Orthodox Church and the ultimate merger of church and state, just like the papacy has done, believing that it controls all the civil leaders of the world under its own documents. That's why the battle is intense. But until all of that takes place, there is going to be an increasing realignment of nations. It's like the Titanic. You see, the Titanic was heading for the icebergs. It was in rough territory, just as we are today, in the Middle East, all around the world. Everything is topsy-turvy. But the captain of the Titanic knew what the conditions were out there, but he had an agenda. His agenda was to become king of the mountain, so to speak. He was going to set a new world transatlantic record. And it didn't matter what the consequences would be. He was going to do it. And that's what he set out to do. And the rest is history. The unthinkable happened to the unsinkable. But it didn't prevent the Titanic from sinking. Because the viewpoint that drove the issue was that which was powerful. The same is true now. Viewpoint determines destiny. And if we do not have a truly biblical viewpoint, we're going to be so confused and so upset from time to time, from day to day, from month to month, and we're going to figure, you know, there's just no sense to any of this. Yes, there is sense to it all, and that's what we're trying to talk about here today, in a short way concerning Russia, Putin, and the Arab nations and the BRICS nations, as well as the ultimate competition between the bear and the Pope. That is a Russian bear and the Pope. So here we have Russia now seeking to choreograph into its camp, wrapping its arms around 480, almost 500 million Arab people, to bring them into his camp. And he's saying sweet nothings in their ears, what they want to hear. Come join with me. You're not going to get this kind of treatment over there with America. You're not going to get this kind of treatment with Europe. No. And if you don't like this, then join the BRICS nations. But if the BRICS nations will do this and the Arab nations, you'll come over and we'll all have this love affair together. And we will set ourselves as a new world order. New international order. That's what's happening. Now, when you consider that 20% of Russia is Muslim, then you begin to understand that Russia and Vladimir Putin have a very powerful inner motivation and strength of persuasion with the Muslim Arab world. Where will it all go? First of all, it's setting the stage for making the final bid to rule the world from the Temple Mount. The big players, Russia and the nations that they're choreographing together, the Vatican for the papacy. We've talked about that before. You can read more about that in my book, King of the Mountain. And then the Western One World Order, it's emerging. The global government of the West, the resurrected Roman Empire, Civil Roman Empire. Those are the three great competitions or competitors. Who will become King of the Mountain? Well, here's what we know. We know that God says, I put my king on my holy hill, no matter what you guys do. Read Psalm 2. Psalm 2 says, why do the nations rage and the people imagine a vain and foolish thing?
The kings of the earth are rising against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let's tear their bands asunder. God says, hey, wait a minute, guys. You don't have a clue what you're doing. You think you're so mighty powerful. You think you're going to go against the God of creation? You think you're going to go against the God of history, against his son, Jesus Christ, who has already been declared and anointed to be King of kings and Lord of lords, and you think you're going to engage in legitimate competition with him? You got to be kidding me, and God's going to laugh at them. Read Psalm 2. He's going to have them in derision. But then he says this, guys, I've already set my king on my holy hill. Why don't you get it? Why don't you understand? I'm God. I set Jesus Christ, Yeshua HaMashiach, the Holy One of Israel, the only Savior of the world, not Vladimir Putin. I've set him upon my holy hill, and I've done it by prophecy. I've done it by declaring my purpose ahead of time, so it's as good as done. Why then are you fighting? Why are you trying to take over? Would you like to know what the answer is? Satan is trying to gain dominion through those people, those nations, because he has said, I am going to rise and ascend to the heights of the north. I am going to be like the Most High God. And that's what's happening. This is a dramatic drama, my friends. The drama of all history and prophecy. And it's taking place right in front of us. Which act are we in right now? Maybe it's Act 3. Maybe it's Act 2. But we're in the act. Can you see what's happening? In order to help you understand what's happening, I'll get a copy of the book, King of the Mountain. It really will open your eyes and your heart and give you a certain amount of understanding. So that when you see these things that are taking place and all the news announcement and so on, you're not going to freak out. You're not going to be so discombobulated. You're not going to start wringing your hands. You're going to be able to see, wow, this is the big picture. The end of all things is at hand. This is what all history has waited for. And Yeshua, Jesus Christ, is going to come. And he's going to manifest himself as King of kings and Lord of lords, and he's going to rule the nations with a rod of iron. Read it in Revelation chapter 19. That's the end of the story. We need to get our minds and our hearts fixed on the Lord, trusting him with a whole heart, leaning not on our own understanding, in all our ways. Not only the information that we're providing here, but it's for the purpose of helping us to come to the place of trusting God and resting in his word, his will, and his ways, and then realizing that things are happening. These things are happening and are going to happen in spades. What should we do? Well, as the Apostle John said, whoever has the hope of the second coming of Christ in him will purify himself as Christ is pure. In other words, we're going to get ready. We're not going to play this game, just wringing our hands. We're going to take positive steps to walk in righteousness, to walk in holiness, to walk in purity, to forgive our enemies, to forgive those who rise up against us unrighteously. We're going to do what God asks us to do. We can't govern anybody else, but we can allow him to rule on the Temple Mount of our hearts. Will you? $20 book, yours for $15. King of the Mountain, the Eternal Epic End Time Battle. Get your copy. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Remember, it's not on Amazon anymore. They're not there anymore. We're not providing any more books to Amazon. They've been gone from Amazon for about a month now. Get them from our website, saveus.org. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries at $6 for postage and handling. And, friend, become a partner. We really are seriously preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. Can you understand that? I hope that resonates in your mind and heart. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.